Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And this is our weekly garden show where we tell you what's going on in our gardens. We pick a subject to talk about, maybe even do a little demonstration, and answer some of your questions from last week's show. So let's get into, first of all, what's been going on around here. We had a deluge last weekend.
That means a lot of rain, don't it?
Lots of rain.
A lot of rain, been cold. So I just want to show everybody this right here. You know, last week we talked about garlic and how them folks up north could grow garlic. And we was a little envious of that, but what we can grow here in the south.
That's right.
The neighbor gave me this right here, come off their tree, said simmer. Peels real easy. And I'm going to tell you, these things are pretty good. So the last few years, they've come up with several different cold variety of satsumas and stuff that we can grow here in South Georgia. A lot of people's planting them in their gardens. They even have some commercial orchards going in. But look there. So that's to you folks that can grow these pretty garlics up north. This is back at you what we can grow down here in the south.
Bet you can't grow them. Yep. It's getting time for all the citrus to come in. Lemons, grapefruits.
Yep.
Oranges. We can't grow a ton of citrus.
No, we've got a lot better. We can grow pretty good. I mean, it's improved a lot in the last few years. Now, if we have one of those hard freezes that we have about every 15, 20 years, it's going to set us back a little bit. But as we do right now, a lot of people have got these growing in their backyard gardens and been real successful with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, they load up. You can pick two or three boxes off one tree sometimes.
Did you get your onions planted?
Onions planted, onions doing good. My garden's up on the hill, so I fared pretty good.
Yeah, I had a bad little washout. Man, they was looking pretty. And all that rain come in.
Yeah, that happens.
I got to replant about, I don't know, 10 or so plants. Yeah. Not a big deal. But I was finally able to, last night, get in the garden with the cultivator teeth a little bit just to try to get it to dry out some.
Yep.
I don't like it just sitting there wet. Yeah. Crusted over like that.
As soon as you can get there and bust that crust and dry it quicker, sometimes you make a mess getting there and doing that. It's hard to hold yourself back, but.
Yeah. I got some stuff I brought here today that I figured we could try. First of all, we got here is this Merlin beet.
I like the Merlin variety.
This is a variety we're going to be carrying with our new seed line that's coming out. And Merlin is one of the sweetest beets out there. It's a variety known for its really high sugar content. Let's see what we got here.
Careful now.
I have been known to cut myself.
Yes, you have.
It's got a nice little deep red.
Yeah.
Center there. Yep. Gonna try a piece of that.
Put that in the camera. They can see how red it is there. Yep. Nice. So you know red. That's got to be full of what they call antioxidants or good stuff.
Got a nice kind of earthy, earthy smell to it. How's it taste?
It's good. It'd be better boiled in some chicken broth, but it's good.
Nice beet flavor there. That'd be a good one to pickle there. Or juice.
Yep.
For some reason in the, I don't know if it's just the frost do it to it, or just because we ain't got enough heat units, but in the fall, winter beets, I don't get near as good greens on them as I do the spring ones.
Right. Well, it stands to reason. It's putting more focus on the root system there to make it through the wintertime.
Those so right there, as far as size, that I like. Now, if you was pickling them, that's probably pretty good size. But we usually let them get a little bit bigger than that, a little smaller than a baseball.
Yeah.
And then we got
Kohlrabi.
Some Kohlrabi here. And this is usually you let this one get a little bigger too than this, but this is a variety called Purple Vienna. And we'll be carrying this one as well. And now you can eat these greens here too. These got kissed by the frost a little bit this morning. But the main money part on this are these little bulbs right here.
Yeah, it's not really a root bulb, yeah.
So you can prick off the leaves there. Let's see what we got right here.
You know, I think that's one of the most underestimated things to grow in the fall and winter time is Kohlrabi.
They're real easy to grow, and they really, that one's got a little red on it from the beet juice there. But they're real easy to grow. They're really cold tolerant.
Similar to the taste of a turnip. Similar.
Let's cut this in half. We'll split it. How about that?
Yep.
And really good in coleslaw.
Stir fry some Asian dishes. I use them as, you know, for that.
A lot of people just like to eat them raw, some salt and pepper on them.
It's not near as tangy as what a turnip is to me. It's not near
not as spicy. Hot, spicy. Got a good crunch to it. If you never tried growing kohlrabi, then give that a try. I really like those.
Yeah, those are good.
We're going to have two varieties. We'll carry the purple Vienna and then I think it's called a white Vienna, but it's a green one. Both of those are really good.
Yep.
And one more thing, I got mustard. My mustard cover crop's looking real good.
Yeah, mine is too. I need to put a little fertilizer on, but mine's looking real good also.
And I'm gonna harvest a few of mine, but I'm gonna go ahead and till mine in pretty soon, I believe, and get it nice incorporated, release them glucosinolates to take care of them nematodes. Yeah. And
I'm just spilling this orange juice all over it.
You got it all over your shirt there. We need to get you a bib for the show.
Yeah.
All right. And actually, hold on. I'm hearing something from my producer. We got a troll alert. Troll alert. Do you know what a troll is?
No, I don't know what a troll is.
Well,
is that one of the little bitty men that run around the movies like the little midgets?
With the big hair?
Yeah.
I don't know that. No, that's not a troll. A troll, in this sense, if we look at Urban Dictionary, which is always a good source for...
It's a wonderful source.
They define troll as trolling, or a troll is the deliberate act of making random, unsolicited comments on the internet to provoke an emotional reaction. It's analogous to the fishing technique of trolling, where colorful baits are pulled behind a slow-moving boat. So, basically unnecessary comments on forums or videos or posts and stuff. And we had a good troll come along here a couple days ago and just got word of that, and this was from one of your old YouTube videos where you was planting potatoes. And this guy, his name was A New Wolf Rising, and his comment was, I dress as a redneck Elmer Thud to make you think I'm not a snake oil salesman. What do you think about that?
He said that about me.
Yeah.
Elmer Thud? Really?
You had your overalls on.
Yeah, I wear my overalls a lot, but I guess he didn't. I'm okay with that. Elmer Thud.
You okay with
it? Yeah, I guess so.
So, definitely a troll there. We always like to address the trolls and bring
them. We like trolls. Sometimes we call them out if they're bad and wrong, but that's okay.
So, that was our troll of the week there.
Elmer Thud.
Selling snake oil.
Oh, sounds
if you wear overalls, you're selling snake oil.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Elmer Thud.
Okay. That's your new nickname.
I got it.
All right. Moving on to our Tool of the Week segment. And we did this on our 2-minute tip this week. And this is our diamond hoe. And I use this to clean up after my okra if you watch my 2-minute tip. Now this thing, we got enough room here. When you use it, it sits flat on the dirt right there.
Scoot it back and forth.
It's going to cut in every direction because it's sharp on all sides. And then if you need to, you can kind of tilt it like that and sure enough dig down.
Works better on small weeds. So you got small weeds in tight places, that's a good go-to hoe right there.
I really like this thing. When I'm cleaning up after a crop, unlike somebody here, sometimes I like to keep all my weeds on top of the dirt, so they can dry and not contribute to the heavy weed seed bank. So this is a good tool for doing that.
Okay.
So check that diamond hoe out. Make a real good Christmas gift for
somebody. Made in USA.
That's right. All right. Now our main segment this week, we're going to talk about figs. And we've talked about figs back when figs was coming in, but we want to talk a little bit more about fig varieties and you kind of taking a liking to becoming a fig aficionado here lately.
Well, I have, and I've done a little bit of research in the past because in my mind, I thought there was maybe four or five different varieties, and I have grown those years ago. And I love figs personally, so it's the thing that I've grown for years and years and years. But then I kind of got out of it because I got disgusted with the varieties I was growing.
Disgusted. Maybe that's a little too harsh.
I was disgusted. I got disgusted. Okay. So anyway, I did a little research, and then the more I got into it, the deeper it got. And then I come to find out there's this whole world out there of fig enthusiasts. I'm talking about these people that are crazy about fig trees. So I got in there and dug some more, and I found out some things that was enlightening to me that I feel like we ought to share. So the varieties that I grew years ago was the old brown turkey fig, which is the most common fig that's out there, in my opinion. And it's got good flavor, but it's got a problem. It's got an open eye on there. And let's see if I got one right here. So I cut this morning, and actually I had a fig on there. So this is the fig that I'm growing now. And this right here is called the eye. That right there.
Uh-huh.
So this variety right here has a closed eye and won't let them insects get in there. The problem with the brown turkey was that when I would pick one off, and it had bugs running out of it everywhere.
Well, then once that eye opens up, that sap comes out of there, and that's just like
Here in the South, it's terrible. You couldn't even hardly eat them. If you did, you had to work around the bugs, and every now and then you'd get one. It just wasn't a very pleasant experience. The figs was good, but I just didn't really enjoy eating the bugs. So I moved on to some varieties that have the closed eye. And then the more I dug, the better I found different flavor profiles that I was not aware of, and things like that. So we want to give you a little lesson in figs today. And maybe it's as interesting to you as it was to me. So there's over 600 different varieties out there. Huge amount of growth. 600 varieties out there. And there's some good tools and resources on the internet that you can go to. And one of them is called Mountain Figs. And we'll put up a link to that on the screen there. Now, the first thing you need to do is understand these different flavor profiles.
Mm-hmm.
And they is
go over those?
Roughly 8. A dark berry fig, a dark sugar berry fig, dark sugar figs, light berry figs, light honey berry figs, and light honey figs.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
They try to break them down into 3 main categories. You've got the berry flavor,
honey flavor,
the honey flavor, and the sugar flavor. Yeah. So as the name suggests, the berry flavor tastes a little more fruity. The honey flavor figs are going to taste a little more kind of like caramel, molasses, a little more of a honey taste. And then the sugar figs, just it seemed from the description, have the kind of the least bit of actual flavor. It's just straight sweetness, tastes like just right. Sugar, maybe with a little tannic in there.
Now this particular one here that I'm growing right now, one of the varieties I'm growing now is a berry.
It's a berry.
See how dark it is?
Mm-hmm.
That is a berry, which is what I'm drawn to. I prefer the berries over, I do most of the others. So this is a particular one that I like.
And it's not like a, that flavor spectrum, it's not you're just a berry or just a sugar or just a honey. It's like a continuum. Mm-hmm. You can be in between.
Continuum,
yeah. So you could be a little bit berry and a little bit honey, or a little bit honey and a little bit sugar.
Yeah, you could do anything you want to do. So this is what I recommend. Try and just see which ones you like. Or if you got one on your property or somebody else's property that you really like, they're real easy to root. They're real easy to propagate. And I've done some of this in the last year. So when you buy figs, a lot of times what you buy is you buy cuttings instead of the actual fig tree, because fig trees are hard ship.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy these cuttings of all of these varieties on eBay, and there's some other sites you can buy them on. So the way people do this is they buy these cuttings and they root them.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a little intimidating, but it's real easy to do, and I'm going to show you how to do that today.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so the first thing I do is take me a little pot. Now you can use a 1-gallon pot or whatever you want to do. And then I wet it. I use some good potting soil, like what we carry, the Pro Mix. And you see there, I fill it up. Now, I always like to wet this beforehand because it can be a little hard.
A lot of water to start with, yeah.
So, I went out this morning and I made me a fig cutting. Now, I didn't get the top end, but this is definitely last year's growth, or this year's growth.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fig tree ain't but a year old. So I cut down, hold that for him.
You can look inside the stem there and tell it's early growth.
So I cut this morning. I go down probably about yay far, then I cut this off. I make sure I got a bud right here at the top. I make sure I got several buds there. You want it about 6 inches long. And there at the bottom, you want to make a flat cut. There at the top, you want to do an angle cut. And the reason for that angle cut is when water hits, it rolls off and didn't go in there. Now, I melted a little bit of beeswax this morning and put on that top, and that's going to keep it from drying out so much. So some type of wax, if you've got it, to put on there at the top, it's not necessary. On the bottom, opposite end of where your bud is there, you want to take it and you want to scrape it just a little bit there, the green like that, and that's going to stimulate it to root out more. Take this, put it way down, stick it way down deep, and that pot's over there, you don't want a whole lot sticking up. You could actually go deeper than that if you could. Now, here's a neat little trick. Take your plastic bottle, cut the bottom out of it, put it on top of this, and you can make you a homemade humidity dome.
A little greenhouse.
You got a little miniature greenhouse there. So, it keeps your humidity really high inside of where this cutting is at. You could also use 2 liter bottle if you're using a big enough pot. Keep this wet, keep it in your house somewhere, probably about 70, 75 degrees. And what you're gonna see after a while is this baby's gonna start trying to leaf out and it's gonna start putting roots on there. It's very easy to do. Your success rate should be somewhere around 80 to 90%. And I always do 2 or 3 to make sure that I got one. And then if I root all 3 of them, then I'll give a couple of them away. Once this thing starts leafing out, just take your top off out there and start giving it some air. Mm-hmm. And you can leave it on there. Till it starts leafing out real good, you're going to go ahead and take your little homemade greenhouse dome there, and you got yourself a fig cut. Very easy to do. It's kind of neat.
And for too long, you have your fig tree.
You have your fig tree. I did one of these last year that fig just come off of, and that fig tree that this cut come off of was a cut last year. And it grew probably up to about 5 feet this year, and I ate figs off of it for at least a good 6 weeks. So they very fast growing. And look here, fig trees are easy to grow.
So that, grab that piece you got over there. So do you use this end right
here? You can use the end. Some people do. I prefer, this is classified as what we call softwood. I prefer to go down about this far and start getting my cuttings. And I could get probably 3 or 4 different cuttings off from this stem right here.
Mm-hmm. As long as you got some buds on there.
Go about 5 to 6 inches, leave you some buds on there, and you can get several off from there. The neat thing is about this is if you got a fig tree somewhere that you want to replicate, that you like the variety, do the cutting things. You can have you several different fig trees, several fig trees there for your own use and giveaway. If there's some varieties that you don't have, go on eBay. There's a lot of them on eBay. You can buy them fairly reasonable. They're easy to ship, get them in, and you can root those or they some other size. Make sure that you order from somebody that you feel comfortable with because you want to make sure that variety is true. So there you have it.
Good advice there on rooting figs, and before too long we'll have fig trees everywhere.
Have them everywhere. I got some rooted right now, some unusual varieties that I've not had before that I want to try. Now LSU did some pretty heavy research, and that's Louisiana State University.
Mm-hmm. Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge. They did some pretty extensive research and development back in the 50s and 60s, and they started getting in the 90s, and they released several different varieties. Those varieties, in my opinion, would be probably the ones to start with. But once you dig into it, there's a lot of Italian varieties. Man, you just get lost in how many are there. But, the LSU varieties, there's a good bit written on the internet about those, and that'd be a good place to start.
How many varieties you got going right now?
Oh man, I probably got name varieties. I probably got 7, and I got a few unnamed that I don't know what they are. That particular one there come from my mother-in-law's yard. I don't have a clue what the variety is. I just like the fig, and I wanted to.
We just need to come up with a name for it.
We may name it. Yeah.
All right. We mentioned the closed eye versus the open eye, and the closed eye is considered an adaptation. That's more advanced there. Excuse me. These right here seem like they'd hold up better in the fridge too.
They do. So if it's important to you, if you have a bug problem like we have down in the south, when you pick that variety, make sure that it is a closed eye variety. That's the only kind I would plant.
And if we look at the inside of the fig here, I don't know if we can see it this close on camera. I might have to put a shot up on the screen. So figs are what they call parthenocarpic.
They're what?
Parthenocarpic, which means they don't require any fertilization to make the fruit.
I would, the way I would have said is they're very low maintenance. They're very easy to grow, very low rate, low maintenance.
So you're not requiring any fertilization. And the reason behind that is what a fig is, it's actually called a synconium. And so it is a housing for all these unfertilized female flower parts. If you think about it here, and you looked at those fibers on the fig, it looks a lot like the female parts of a flower. So that's all those are unfertilized female flower parts. And of course, because they're in this casing, and there's no male flower, you're not gonna get any fertilization there, but they do make very tasty treats for us to eat. These berry ones, they say, taste a little bit like kind of strawberry-ish taste. They look a lot prettier, a lot better to me. Can you eat the outside of them, too?
Yeah, I didn't wash that particular one, but you're more welcome to. Had a little bird droppings on it, so I wouldn't want me to go ahead. It's okay.
Those are really good.
Anyway, check out figs. Mountain Figs. There's also a forum on the internet called owlfigs.com. This is where these fig enthusiasts go to, and I joined it. You may want to check it out if your interests lie there. You can dig down deep, get some good advice, find out a lot more than probably what you want to know about figs. Owlfigs.com is the forum.
And then the other site was
Mountain Figs.
Mountainfigs.com. Mm-hmm. And that's got a ton of information on it. Oh, yeah.
Good pictures, too.
So, a lot more to learn about figs there than maybe you thought there was with all the different varieties and the flavor profiles and all that. So, good stuff there.
Just some of the varieties while you're doing that. Some of the varieties that LSU has released is Scott's Black, Improved Celestial. Is that what you said? Celestial?
Celeste.
LSU Purple, Tiger, LSU Gold, Champagne, and O'Rourke. So they got several good varieties, different flavor profiles that they have released that are supposedly real good to grow in the South here.
And from what I understand reading it, what happened was they did all this research in the mid 1900s there towards the 80s, and then they kind of stopped. Whoever was leading the research, I guess, left or retired or whatever. And then they kind of picked it back up in the 90s. And then they just slowly started releasing these varieties one at a time.
And probably what happened is when the age of the internet came around, where information flowed more freely as it does now, then that could get out a lot of it better. I could see how back in the 50s and 60s, it'd be hard to get that information out there.
Yeah, where it wasn't in digital format. Yeah. All right, so let's get to our Q&A section this week. And if we answer your question on the show, we'll send you a free koozie, as always. If you have any questions during the show, always put those in the comments, and we will get to them next week. Love to see your questions and comments.
Yep. First question is from Jeff Williams. During the discussion about onions, Travis suggested that you use overhead irrigation for some crops and drip irrigation for others. Which one gets the tape? Theoretically, you can use tape on anything. Now, I have to make the decision because, we sell irrigation drip tape, but it can be kind of pricey. So what I do is I try to evaluate and see where that crop wants the drip tape or not, and if it wants the cost and the effort to put it in. Your short-term crops, and the time of year that I plant it makes that decision for me. So if I'm planting something that's going to be 21 days or 35 days, I don't think it wants drip tape. Wow. I think I can overhead that if I need to, and I don't think that particular crop, and some of those would be some of your summer squashes. I'm very leery about putting some of those on drip tape because I don't think they want the expense and the trouble of putting that in. Microgreens, some things like that. Now, on the other hand, you got your high-value, long-term crops, which is tomatoes, peppers, watermelons, pumpkins that you grow in the summertime that I think I always put my drip tape on. And I always put drip tape on my corn. simply because it's just easier for me to do. And we don't never know when we're going to have a dry year. So that's the way I look at it. Now, Travis does things a little bit different. He uses drip tape a lot more often than I do. But I kind of look at that, and I'm trying to make a decision where short-term crops and also the time of year that's planted makes my mind whether I want to use drip tape or not.
Yeah, the way I look at it is the time it takes the crop to mature and also the spacing. So if something is spaced really intensively, like a bed of mixed Asian greens or a bed of mustard like that, I'm not going to be able to water that as well as I with drip tape as I could overhead because it's dense. I mean, you've got literally plants every inch there. So if it's really intensively planted, I'll plant it on the side of the garden and overhead water. The time you mentioned is also a big thing there. Stuff like potatoes that are pretty quick.
And that you grow there in the wintertime where you normally have a lot of rain.
Yeah. But if it's something that I'm going to need to shoot a lot of fertilizer to, I like using drip because I can pump it in there real easy with that injector. So I do use quite a bit more than he does.
Just a matter of preference.
All right, let's get to our second one. And this is, we've had a question from him before. Old Grumpy Neanderthal was wondering, where'd you get your hat?
This hat's a Filson. I just got it in. I had one that I wore for years and years, and it got wore out and got kind of nasty, so I decided to get me another one. This is a Filson. Some of the folks made a comment that these wax canvases can get a little hot, and they can. I don't wear this hat, but just on cold days. When I'm out in the garden and working, it's pretty warm. I have to change out and use something different. But I do like my Filson hat. I like it on cold days. If I lived up north, I'd wear it more often. But I don't wear it that much during the year, but I do like it during the cold days. Keeps that old head warm.
Yeah, I got a brown one like that, and it will make your head steam if it ain't cold enough out there.
Yep.
All right. And maybe we'll do a future show where we talk about some gardening attire a little bit more. I think that might be pretty good.
Elmer Thud.
All right. We hope you enjoyed the show tonight, and we will see you guys next week.
See you later.